Well, bust my bloody buttons. Here comes the colonel.
Yeah, well, I didn't think it was very funny either, but this is radio, so you can't see what she did to make the audience laugh. You know, this isn't normally a risque program, but anyway, a serious science program. Here we are. Welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. And before we get back to our interview, our very exciting and wonderful interview with Russell Smith, who is opening the TRIA conference in Dallas tonight, as a matter of fact, and then all this week through Thursday. Check it out at Texas Renewables, that's with an S, texasrenewables.org. And before we get back to Russell Smith and an encore presentation with Steve Snyder, of course, at the end of the comment, the voice of reason, we're going to step over here to our fountain of useless information and throw in the coins.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Aha, I see we've summoned the spirit of the fountain. A simple thing of throwing in the coins, because the fountain knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, O spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. What New York City mayor was famous for reading the Sunday comics over the radio? What New York City mayor read the Sunday comics over the radio? I'll give you a hint. Oh, Spirit of the Fountain is from the 1930s when radio was king. Who was it?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
The Spirit of the Fountain knows. The New York City mayor, famous for reading the Sunday comics over the radio? Yes, it was. It was LaGuardia. Absolutely. All right. Now back to our program.
Hey, won't be long now.
Yeah, some hot jazz from the Science News Studio Band. All right, well, let's get back to our discussion with Russell Smith of TRIA.
This past spring, I traveled to Santa Fe, New Mexico, to speak with the principal people that are putting together the Tres Amigas project, where the country's three electoral grids, Texas, the eastern grid, and the western grid, are going to come together at Clovis, New Mexico. They're breaking ground on that, I believe, as we speak. And but if things move the way they are, that all of us are going to have our own electrical generating in our own particular homes and businesses feeding the grid. I just wonder if we're seeing some controversy there, and all the transmission lines that are being built in West Texas and the wind farms and those sorts of things. How are all these things going to work together?
Well, it's easy to characterize it in us against them terms, which many people seem to do when it comes to utility scale distribution, transmission, and so forth, as opposed to distributed. But the reality of it is that it's going to be a combination of both. I personally have no sense at all that the large-scale transmission grid system that we have and the centralized utility production is going to disappear. There's an awful lot of investment in the transmission system, and it's going to be utilized, and there'll be more. But at the same time, distributed systems out there are going to be feeding into it, and so in a sense, the advanced capabilities that ERCOT, for example, is involved in right now when it comes to software and understanding integration of the blend and so forth is going to, in a sense, serve as a battery itself, of balancing out the grid and having the technical capability to handle all of these disparate types of generation and sizes of generation and locations of generation is a huge part of the answer to how the system is going to move forward. A combination of all of these things is very complex. It's the largest machine, in a sense, in the world, the electrical system. So we believe that that this discussion among reasonable people will find a way to make all of this work together many, many reasons to want to keep developing in the decades ahead. It's not going away either. In many ways, it's not going away. It's infinite.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, of course, you talk about the electrical system being the biggest machine in the world. And, of course, the three electrical grids coming together at one spot, and all these disparate energy sources that we're developing that you're very, very close to involved with and have been for a number of years, brings up the question of security. I mean, there's with the terrorist threats, it's a sure attractive target to be able to shut down our electrical grid, especially if it can happen in large areas. Do you see the security issue being something that is going to need increased attention?
Well, I expect that that's one of the topics that may well come up in one of the panels that we have during the conference, which is entitled Future and Direction of Electric Transmission in Texas, with some of the top people, including Mr. Phil Harris, who is the president and CEO of Tres Amigas, will be on that panel. But my gut reaction to that is, when has there not been a potential threat to the transmission system? We've had a large-scale electric transmission system for a long, long time. And if you go back in the not-that-far-back history, there have been attacks on the transmission system off and on for decades. In California, during one period of time, there was a real concerted effort on the part of some domestic-type terrorists to interrupt the transmission system and attack the grid. And yes, the short answer is yes. It's always vulnerable to these sorts of things. But there are also counters to this vulnerability, just like there are for computers and so forth. The electronic attacks on it are potentially high. All over the world, this is an issue. But there are also people working 24 hours a day to counter those kinds of attacks. So, yeah, there's a peril, but there always has been, and there likely always will be.
Well, we speak in terms of the whole renewables as being a revolution, and of course it's a revolution that's been going on for some time. And we've noticed, like in Colorado and other places, that the whole green renewables revolution is being led oftentimes, certainly joined by many young legalized marijuana workers, as we see in Colorado and Washington and some other states. They seem to be the people that are kind of leading the way, demanding that we scrap the fossil fuels and go to renewables. Was that a surprise to you that the movement has attracted the legalized group?
Well, no. There's always been different, I guess, different perspectives, if you will, on how things will and should move forward, and they run the gamut from the far left to the far right. So there are elements of every political stripe out there who have opinions about this, because after all, energy is central to everyone's lives, and so how we do energy affects pretty much everything. So nothing surprises me as to who gets on board and what they may envision in their view as to what the future is or should be for the various energy sources. I don't know if that gets to your question or not, but that's what it triggered in my mind.
All right, Russell. How about looking down the road, maybe 5 years or so? You're going to be, you're very steeped in this conference. You can see the trends, see how things are going. Give us a prediction of what you see 5-10 years down the road.
Personally, what I see is a significant increase in individual homes and businesses providing their own power with renewable sources and with a blend in some cases of renewables and natural gas, depending on the size of the entity and so forth, and a capability of the larger electric structure out there to accommodate this through smart meters and monitors and so on. in a way that works and functions well for everyone. I see it evolving into a robust, more sustainable, longer term type of utility and electrical structure. That's what I see.
All right, Russell Smith, as always, such a pleasure having you on the program. We'll look forward to talking to you about the next Texas Renewables that's going to go on in 2015. I don't suppose that you have chosen a site yet, or have you?
Yes, we're at the Weston Galleria in Houston.
Wonderful, and I hope you'll come back with us and tell us about how that particular event is developing, and so that we can give plenty of publicity to it, because it is certainly something that our audience is extremely interested in. So, Russell Smith, the executive director, I guess is your title for the Texas Renewables 2014, with TREA. The oldest renewable energy nonprofit trade organization in Texas. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
At this time, we've got a little nice treat for you. We've got an encore air that we did back in 2010 with the late Stephen Schneider, who he and I became very, very dear friends. I admired his work so much. Leading a climatologist, Stanford University, died of a heart attack in an airplane shortly after this interview was taken. He wrote the book Science as a Contact Sport, and it was published by National Geographic. And we had a fun time talking about the book, and thought maybe you'd like to have a listen to this encore presentation with Steve.
The people in your book are fascinating. Tell us about Paul Ehrlich. I had forgotten about Paul Ehrlich until I saw him in your book, and you need to tell our listeners about that.
Well, Paul is an amazing character. He wrote The Population Bomb in 1968, and you know, and became a rock star too. He was on Johnny Carson. And, you know, it's pretty well known. And Paul's kind of a don't-take-prisoners type. He's really in your face. He's very funny. But he does alienate people of different ways of thinking. But he's been accused of a lot of false things. What he wrote in The Population Bomb is, the battle to feed all of humanity is over. All of, he said. Now he's been called, oh, Ehrlich's prediction is totally wrong. There's a smaller percentage of people with malnutrition now than there was in 68. That's true. But there are more people hungry now because there's so many more people. And Paul said the battle to feed all of humanity. And we don't feed all of humanity. There's still a billion people who live at the nutritional margins, which for me, in a world of our wealth, is almost obscene. And there's lots of reasons for that. We obviously aren't going to go into all the reasons now. Some of it has to do with greed on the part of the rich. Some of it has to do with terrible governance and bad, you know, lack of markets and the poor. And there are all these factors. But Paul was pretty well right on that. And we have to deal with it. So he's always been out there. But what other aspect of Paul did you want me to talk about?
Oh, I saw him in your book, and I thought, well, it would be really neat if you could relate that anecdote as I saw in the book for the people that don't have the book in hand like I do and are planning to run right out and buy it. So,
well, the one thing that I will say about Paul is, you know, when you see him, you see this guy who comes on very funny and kind of very in your face on people with different points of view. Mm-hmm. You don't know that what's hiding beneath that, the surface of this sort of in-your-face guy. When I had my bone marrow transplant from my mantle cell lymphoma cancer 8 years ago, and I was living in a clean room for the 3 weeks while I was recovering and they were trying to keep me alive, Paul came every single day, scrubbed up, and came to visit to perk up my spirits. He ran an email net telling everybody in the world what was going on, and I got all these phone calls of support. So sometimes there are aspects of people that you'll never see from their public persona, which in his case is sort of the aggressive hammer against people hurting nature, whereas at the same time there was this softy, you know, out there really spending all his time when his friend was sick.
Okay. All right, Steve. That helps me a whole lot. I want to just remind the people that if they just tuned in that we're talking to Steve Schneider, who's a professor for interdisciplinary environmental studies and a senior fellow at Stanford University and the author of the just published book by the National Geographic called Science as a Contact Sport. Now, Steve, I've got to ask you this. Frank Newport from Gallup, the survey people, and I'm going to read this verbatim, says Gallup's annual update on Americans' attitude toward the environment shows a public that over the last 2 years has become less worried about the threat of global warming, less convinced that its effects are already happening, and more likely to believe that scientists themselves are uncertain about its occurrences. Now, this is a quote from this Frank Newport in Gallup. And last thing here, he says, in response to one key question, 48% of the Americans now believe that the seriousness of global warming is generally exaggerated, up from 41% in 2009 and 31% in 1997 when Gallup first asked the questions. Now, this shows, I think, that those of you who are trying to warn us about global warming really have your work cut out for you. And then my question is are you going backwards?
The simple answer to the question you'd never expect a yes or a no out of me is yes, we are, but not for long. Unfortunately, what really, really worries me is what's going to turn it around is the wrong thing, the hurricane that takes out Miami or that does some serious damage, who's intensified by the warmer oceans. I want us to be rational and do things in advance, not wait for the catastrophes. Remember, we had a protocol called the Montreal Protocol that banned the injection of ozone-depleting substances 15 years after we knew that we were going to deplete ozone. Only after we got an ozone hole. I wish we didn't have to be kicked in the teeth before we do things. But it's a really fair question. I do believe that there's been an erosion of this, and there's been a perfect storm of reasons. Let's start with the economic meltdown, now 1 to 2 years old, and that's when the polls started to drop. When you start having unemployment, when people start becoming insecure about their future, it shifts them away from worrying about long-term grandchildren problems toward immediate get through next week. And that's legitimate. I'm not arguing that's an incorrect reaction on the part of people, but it is, in fact, understandable that they'd be shifting their priority toward more short-term immediate things. Then you add on top of that the fact that my colleagues, my scientist friends, are the world's worst communicators. We do what the journalists call we bury our lead. We start talking about everything we don't know first, and then in the bottom paragraph, oh, by the way, we could have a catastrophic outcome here, and it's a life support system of the Earth, but we're not sure. And then, so we don't help. Then there are the special interests, the people who make money by business as usual, and, you know, they're just trying to protect market share, and they're going to sit there and they're going to tell you, oh, carbon dioxide, it's life. It's a fertilizer of green plants. It is. It's true. But they forget to tell you it also fertilizes weeds and acidifies the oceans, threatening the food chain of the planet, as well as climate change. So they give you an incomplete picture, and they have megabucks, and they take out ads, and it's very confusing, and the average person can't sort out these claims and counterclaims. And we're in a period of economic problem. Now we end up getting this climate gate, which shows that, yes, scientists are human. They get frustrated, and they even occasionally try to hide stuff. It's a tiny fraction of scientists, but that plays into it. And then the high priests, you know, the IPCC, actually made an error or two, which is true. And all of that conspires at the same time to make people say, wait a minute, maybe it's not true. What they haven't said is what we talked about at the beginning, which is, what's the error rate of the IPCC? Less than 1%. Oh, my God, it's an amazingly good institution. But they forget that because that's not been part of the story. So this perfect storm of all these factors occurring is obviously hurting the public perception.
My very dear friend, the brilliant and late Stephen Schneider, Stanford University, that was recorded in 2010, right after his book came out, Science as a Contact Sport. And I hope you enjoyed it. I terribly miss Steve. He's been a guest on this program so many times, and he was always the most remarkable person to interview. Loved him to death, and his untimely death on an airplane with a heart attack.
not long after this interview was recorded, was pretty devastating to those of us in the science community. I want to remind you, the Texas Renewables is going on starting tonight. Texas Renewables 2014 at the Sheraton Hotel in beautiful downtown Dallas, Texas. That's right, the new Texas utility model, evolution or revolution. And you can learn more about that at texasrenewables.org. So be sure and stop in and say hello, and when you get down there, tell them the Colonel sent you. Also, want to remind you, in coming in the spring is the 2015 IEEE International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies. That's going to be at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts, which essentially is Boston. You can find out more about the Homeland Security Technologies Conference at IEEEHST.org. I'm going to give that to you again a little bit better. IEEE-HST.org. This is the famous and historic International Conference on Homeland Security Technology Gaps, and key technical gaps will be closely examined. It's the place to be in the middle of April. Experts going to confer to frame the challenges in protecting homeland assets. And the plenary speaker is Dr. Reginald Brothers. He's Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Science and Technology. Dr. Brothers is going to be a guest on this program, we think, sometime in December or January. We're trying to work it out right now. And a lot of exciting things are happening. The Department of Homeland Security is an integral part of this conference. I think they're going to be there every day of the event, and we're going to have more information on that as time goes by, too. So be listening to this program, and catch us online, promiseoftomorrow.biz. And if you want to find out more about the Homeland Security Technologies Conference, go to the right-hand side of your screen and give it a click, and it'll take you right to the website. Wonderful being with you, and before we go, I want to remind you that this program is commercial-free because of you, and we do appreciate donations, so let's talk about that a little bit. Before we get to the end of the program, and the very popular Voice of Reason is coming up, but first, and at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I think I would say that pushing boundaries and striving for the best have always at the heart of my life. And I always believe that the biggest enemy is myself. So I always try to improve myself and remind myself to be creative, active, positive, and supportive. And actually, this is now the core value of my research team. And I encourage anybody who is surrounding me to be positive and active. My name is Qin Chang Zhong, a professor of Control and Systems Engineering at the University of Sheffield in the United Kingdom.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.